Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Creative Habit Learn It and Use It for Life is a practical nonfiction book by choreographer Twyla Tharp, written with Mark Rieder, that treats creativity as a disciplined practice rather than an elusive gift. First published in 2003, it draws on Tharp's long career in dance and the broader problems faced by anyone who has to begin, sustain, and complete original work. The book is structured around short essays and a large set of exercises designed to train observation, improve mental organization, and establish reliable routines. Its purpose is not to romanticize inspiration, but to show how preparation, repetition, and self-knowledge make creative work possible. Because Tharp writes from the perspective of a working artist, the book has a concrete, operational feel that makes it useful for painters, writers, performers, designers, business professionals, and other people who need to produce ideas under pressure. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, creativity as a learned habit rather than a rare gift. The book's central claim is that creativity is not reserved for a special few and does not depend on unpredictable flashes of inspiration. Tharp argues that creative output comes from repeated preparation, practice, and a willingness to show up for the work. This framing matters because it shifts the problem from talent to process. Instead of asking whether someone is naturally creative, the book asks whether that person has built habits that make creativity more likely. That includes being able to begin without drama, to work through uncertainty, and to treat the blank page or empty stage as a normal condition of creative labor. The argument is persuasive because it is grounded in Tharp's professional life as a choreographer, where originality still depends on discipline, structure, and rehearsal. By redefining creativity as repeatable behavior, the book gives readers a more realistic and less mystical model for making things consistently. Secondly, the role of rituals in protecting creative energy. A major thread in the book is that rituals create the conditions under which creative work can happen. Tharp does not present ritual as superstition or inspiration theater. She treats it as a stabilizing framework that helps the mind enter work mode. This can include the way a workspace is arranged, the sequence used to start a project, or the habits that mark the transition from ordinary life into concentrated effort. The value of ritual in her account is practical. It reduces friction, lowers resistance, and conserves mental energy for actual making. The book suggests that many creative blocks are really failures of preparation and environment rather than evidence of inadequacy. By building reliable routines, a person can make it easier to begin and less likely to be derailed by hesitation. This is one reason the book is useful outside the arts, since any demanding project benefits from predictable cues that help attention settle and work proceed. Thirdly, exercises that train observation, storage, and retrieval of ideas. The book is organized around exercises because Tharp believes creativity improves through active training. Several of these exercises focus on observation and capture, encouraging readers to notice details in the world and record them before they disappear. The idea is that creative work often depends on raw material that has been seen, noted, and stored for later use. This makes the notebook, the sketch, and the collected reference material central tools in the creative process. Other exercises address mental order, helping readers sort through clutter and make their thinking more usable. The practical insight here is that creativity is not only about generating new ideas, but also about managing information well enough to recover and recombine it. Tharp's method is especially useful for people who feel stalled because they assume they need a finished idea before they can begin. Instead, she shows how small acts of recording and organizing can create momentum and make originality more accessible over time. Fourthly, working with constraints, structure, and the spine of a project, Tharp repeatedly shows that limits can support creative work rather than block it. One of the book's notable ideas is that a project needs a spine, meaning a central organizing principle that gives the work direction and coherence. Without that structure, ideas can remain scattered or ornamental. She also emphasizes the usefulness of constraints, because boundaries force clearer choices and prevent a project from dissolving into vague possibility. This approach reflects the realities of professional creation, where time limits, technical limits, and medium-specific rules are constant. The point is not to narrow imagination, but to make imagination legible and actionable. By asking what the project is really about and what rules can focus it, the book helps readers move from diffuse intention to workable form. This is one of the book's strongest contributions because it connects originality to architecture. Creative freedom is made more effective when it has a shape to work within. Lastly, using setbacks, blankness, and resistance as part of the process. Another important theme is how to handle the psychological discomfort that comes with starting and sustaining creative work. Tharp does not deny that blankness, fear, confusion, and frustration are real. Instead, she normalizes them as part of the process. Her advice encourages readers to keep working through those states rather than waiting for perfect clarity. This is especially important because many creative people interpret resistance as a sign that they are not suited for the task. The book counters that interpretation by treating resistance as a predictable condition that can be managed through action, routine, and self-organization. The same logic applies to failure. Instead of seeing it as proof of inability, the reader is pushed to see it as information that helps refine the work. That makes the book emotionally practical as well as intellectually useful. It offers a way to remain functional when confidence is low, which is often the difference between abandoned projects and completed ones. In conclusion, The Creative Habit is best suited for readers who want a serious, usable account of how creative work actually gets done. Artists, writers, performers, designers, educators, and professionals in problem-solving roles will all find value in its emphasis on preparation, ritual, and disciplined practice. It is especially helpful for people who struggle with starting, maintaining focus, or turning scattered ideas into finished work. Compared with many books on creativity, it stands out because it is neither a vague motivational guide nor a purely theoretical study. Tharp writes from lived artistic practice and translates that experience into concrete methods, making the book unusually practical for a work in this category. Its exercises, attention to routines, and focus on mental organization give it a workshop quality that readers can immediately apply. The result is a book that treats creativity as a craft with repeatable habits, which makes it more durable and more actionable than books that depend mainly on inspiration, personality, or abstract encouragement. If you would like to support Twyla Tharp, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.